96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. No matter where black boys start in life, they will always be behind their white counterparts economically. That, according to a new study released by the Equality of Opportunity Project. Well, tonight, we are examining this issue from different perspectives. My guests are Washington Post reporter Tracy Jan. She covers the intersection of race and the economy, and she also has a biracial son. Also with us, Valerie Wilson, director of the Program of Race, Ethnicity, and the Economy with the Economic Policy Institute. This is a really interesting study, and I hope that you join this conversation at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Tracy, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And Valerie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Harold.
Let me first start with you, Tracy. You cover, obviously, race and the economy. Give me kind of an overview of what this report is suggesting.
Yeah, basically, Raj Chetty and Nathaniel Hendren at Harvard and Stanford found that no matter where you live in the United States, and no matter what your economic background is, if you are black growing up in America, you will grow up to earn less than your white peer if you're a black male. And the difference is between $9,000 and $11,000 on average. So this means if you're wealthy and you're black and your white wealthy peer grows up next door to you, you're still going to come out behind, even if you go to the same schools, even if both your parents are at home with you.
Why is that?
That is a question that the researchers did not directly address in their study, but people have surmised that simple racism. I mean, not so simple, but a lot of people who study this stuff are not surprised by the findings. I think the fact that if you keep the family backgrounds the same and you still come out different, it shows that there's something in our society. Perhaps it's how people view black men in the workplace. Even from when they're boys in the classrooms, they're treated differently at the same schools, with black boys being disproportionately disciplined.
Valerie, are you surprised at what this study, this report is suggesting?
I was not at all surprised. I think the findings of this research are consistent with many of the things that I've been talking about for years, and a number of other African-American scholars have been researching and writing about for a number of years. And I think that it only serves to bolster the point that race matters in this country. There's no way around it. We have to address the issue of race and racism.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about a new study that suggests that black boys, even starting out on equal footing with their white counterparts, will grow up to be behind those white counterparts economically. What's behind it? What can be done about it? We are talking about it. Lines are open if you have a comment or question, again at 202-319-7810. What did you find surprising about this study, Tracy?
My most surprising thing is not the fact that this gap exists. It's that they found a different result when you're looking at black women, black girls, that this gap does not exist for them, but it's simply a gender-driven thing. There's something about the men. And again, they don't address why. And I'd be interested in hearing Valerie's thoughts on that.
Yeah, and that's beyond just, as you just mentioned, Valerie, yeah, race matters. But let's drill down a little bit about that. In what way does race matter, particularly when you were talking about black boys, as the study suggests, that are also raised in affluent communities? They were raised with advantages that perhaps some of the majority of African-American boys are not.
Right. And, you know, I think it's important to, I think with the point that Tracy was just making about the results for girls, black girls being different than the results for black boys, I think it's important to understand that in the context of that's black girls relative to white girls. I believe if we would compare both of those, white girls and black girls, to what happens relative to white boys, we would see a gap there as well.
Right.
And I think that's consistent with the research as well. We tend to find, at least in terms of pay disparities, that most of the pay disparity experienced by black women is a gender disparity. And so I think what that speaks to in getting to this other question about black boys raised in the same communities with similar experiences has to do with the way that opportunity and sort of the power structure of this country is. I think beyond just looking at it in terms of black boys falling behind as they get older and earn income, I think it also speaks to the privilege of whiteness and white males in particular.
You mentioned something interesting. You spoke about black boys falling behind. Is it black boys falling behind, or is it white boys racing ahead?
Right, and that was the point that I'm making. I think as much as we look at the study and look at the difference and think about it in terms of black boys falling behind, I think the opposite of that is just as true, if not more true, in that there are privileges and advantages to being a white male in this country that those who are not white males typically don't benefit from. And that would include women as well as men and women of color alike.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about a study that is suggesting that no matter where black boys start in life, they will always end up behind their white counterparts economically. Let's go to the phone lines. Lou calling from D.C. Lou, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Lou, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Arlene. Arlene calling from wherever you're calling from.
D.C.
Go right ahead, Arlene. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm often confused because when people are...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Turn your radio down, Arlene, okay. If you can, please.
You know, I'm often confused because, you know, when you're running a race, if you start behind the person, unless you have faster legs, better tennis shoes, etc., you're going to lose the race. And so if black boys start off behind, or black women start off behind, unless they have opportunities and or people in those positions that are doing the hiring, etc., then they stay behind.
Well, the study the study is suggesting that you are not, that they are not starting behind, that
they are.
Hold on. Let me make the point that the study is suggesting that it is a one-to-one correlation in the beginning. If they're starting on the same equal footing, whether you are a black boy raised in an affluent community where there are white boys on your street going to the same school, same circumstances, and you all start together, but as an adult, you end up behind economically. Your earning potential is considerably less. That is what it is suggesting. One of the other things that it is also, however, suggesting is that even those that are in affluent communities may end up behind those that are behind other black boys that are from less affluent communities. Go right ahead, Arlene. Finish your point.
Well, my point is the only difference between those is race. And so although we try to say that it's equal at some point, it's never equal.
So where do you think things begin to break down?
Well, I think myself and my own children, you know, they went to a private school in the D.C. area, and all of their friends were, if you will, equal elementary to even junior high, and at about high school, they start, you know, tapering off to their cliques or, you know, people that sort of either had the same extracurricular activities.
But where do you think the problem was? I mean, you're saying everybody's doing the same. So where's the breakdown?
Well, the breakdown is the fact that we don't take a look at what's really happening. It happens very early in, I would say, when people think for themselves. you know, and again, I'm saying about the high school age when you start getting your job.
Okay. I got to go to another phone call, but thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tracy, you wanted to make a comment?
Oh, I just wanted to mention that I got a lot of response for this story, and people, I don't know, they obviously didn't read the study or the story clearly, because they said, well, it's because Black fathers aren't home, and they blame it on that. The research clearly shows that these kids were coming from the same family background, so dual parents. They did find, however, that if there is a higher percentage of Black father presence in the neighborhood, the Black boys in that neighborhood do tend to do better, even if the dads are not their own. So if there's male role models in the community, they do succeed at a higher level.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Valerie, let me let you make a final comment before the break.
Okay. I think an important thing to remember about this, because there's a lot of moving parts in this study, I think the point that's being made about Black boys starting out from households with two-parent households, parents have similar levels of education, income, and even wealth, that when we look at what happens to their outcomes in adulthood, the income earned by those Black men is less than their white male counterparts. But I think it's also important to understand that that doesn't dismiss the role that things like education play. Education is important for mobility. You will do better with education than you will, with more education than you will with less education. However, education does not eliminate racial disparities. And that comes across not only in this study when we look at income, but we've also seen those results in areas like, for example, the wealth gap. Education alone does not eliminate the wealth gap. And so often when we talk about these disparities, the tendency is, as Tracy mentioned, for people to point to problems or deficiencies with the individuals. You didn't have a father in a home. You didn't go to school long enough. You didn't get the right degree. But, you know, increasingly we're finding more and more that even when we equalize those things, the results and the outcomes are not equal. And that is the reason why I say that we can't dismiss the issue of race and racism in economic outcomes. Mm.
Valerie, thank you so much. I appreciate your contribution to this conversation. Need to take a break, but when we come back, we are going to be talking to RJ in Virginia, also Derek in D.C., and we will be taking more phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation and your input in just a few seconds. Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion tonight about economic disparities for Black boys when compared to their white peers, even when they start on equal footing. My guests are Washington Post reporter Tracy Jan. She covers the intersection of race and the economy for the Post. She also has a biracial son. Also joining us now, Dr. Greg Carr, Chair of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. If you have a question, if you have a comment, please give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. We're going to start with Dr. Carr. Dr. Carr, how are you?
Brother, I'm doing fine. I'm sorry I can't be there physically with you in your classroom.
Well, I'm just glad that you were able to take the time to talk to us. I'm sure you've had a chance to look at the, you know, the study and the reporting behind it. What are your thoughts about this?
Nothing surprising. You know, we have kind of lost our way in terms of the Black thinking classes when it comes to analyzing some of this stuff. You know, to think about this in terms of Black boys and Black girls is problematic in some ways because, again, we're just aggregating by gender. But when we think about it, when we think about the report in terms of Black community, certainly when we look at the fact that this impacts Black families, what is revealed by this study is the reality that it is very difficult for black communities to build, maintain, and institutionalize the type of resources necessary to establish ourselves in this country as not only an economic force, but as a political force, to establish any form of kind of cultural autonomy. And so what the report really reveals to us is the continuing impact of enslavement and segregation, and it doesn't really pose solutions, because the ultimate solution for this really will require a complete rethinking and reacting of attitudes toward black life. That to me, in a nutshell, is kind of like what this report kind of confirms.
Tracy, you have a son. He's biracial. Did this, as a mother, not as a reporter, but as a mother,
always a reporter.
Yeah, always a reporter. Yeah, and you're going to be a mother for the rest of your life.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's right. Did this give you pause? Did it, after doing your reporting and really reading it, did you kind of sit back and look at your son and go, hmm?
Well, I think Michelle Singletary said it best in her column recently. She says she stopped being a helicopter mom, meaning that she's going to be looking at every single opportunity that her children are given throughout their education, even when they're in college. And I think for parents of color, sometimes you just can't, you know, step off the pedal. Now, I'm Asian, I'm Chinese American, so we have the tiger mom stereotype. In my case, I'm more concerned about making sure my son, from the time he's in preschool, is seen by his teachers and is motivated, for the teachers to be motivated to fulfill his potential. Frankly, this has nothing to do with the DC public schools, which my son is in, but we've been strongly thinking about homeschooling our son because of these issues. And you have statistics nationally, even in DCPS, showing that black boys are disproportionately disciplined, suspended, even from the age of 4. Which is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. There have been very recent studies about that.
Right. For behavior that their white peers are not disciplined for.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Carr, before I go back to the phone lines, that's one of the things that I think is very critical when it comes to studies like this and issues like this. Does this mean that parents, you know, of color, specifically black parents, need to rethink how they are educating their children about the world at large?
Of course it does. I mean, and you know, it's very important to emphasize that what the report reveals, again, nothing new to any of us who have lived in black community and worked in black community, is that the absence of men in the community, period, is a great source of this structural inequality. In other words, we're not just talking about biological fathers. We're talking about the presence of black men. So this speaks to the structural assault that we just heard you lay out. When you start talking about the criminalization of black children,
mm-hmm.
We see the criminalization of black boys. We see the criminalization of black girls. A lot of recent scholarship on that. But the impact on the criminalization, the impact of the criminalization of black boys, has a different effect. I would argue, or I would contend, that it has a different effect because not of anything black boys or black girls do, but the nature of white supremacy, which is a patriarchal system. The fear of black boys isn't about anything black boys do or black girls do. It's about what white men think.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a projection of a kind of doppelganger patriarchy. And so, you know, when black women are looking for black men, and these brothers are either locked up or mismatched economically or educationally, that's a direct result of this white male fantasy that permeates this entire culture. So I think one of the solutions, finally, is that we have to continue to reach out to black men to be present, not just in the home, but mm-hmm. in community with our community. Community centers, after school programs, more black men in the classrooms. And so just so that proximity can begin to address some of these issues. That's a real tangible thing we can do.
Mm. Thanks, Doc. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. RJ, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, RJ. What's on your mind?
Thanks for accepting my call, Mr.
Sure.
Fisher. The doctor just hit the nail on the head as far as I was concerned on what was going on, and it's been going on for many, many years. I remember in the 70s where, and one of your panelists mentioned it as far as the women and the disparity against their peers are not as diverse as the ones against the black male and them. And what happens, just to dig deep and to keep it short, this is what breaks down the fabric of the home.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the women become more independently sufficient with the money that they're making to suffice the home, and the men, like he said, we're being incarcerated at an exorbitant rate and things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we're being underpaid, and just being a dominant black male, we, you know, that's when we use other resources to try to pick up the slack, and that's where we fall short.
Okay. Well, RJ, thank you so much for your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to, is this Debrick? Debrick. Calling
yes,
from,
how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you? What's
I'm
on your
wonderful.
Mind?
My concern is that I understand that we're behind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been enslaved for a long time. White folks had the infrastructure long before we even tried to get our infrastructure. Well, my concern is to stop saying that we're behind, because I know we're behind. I want to know how we closed that gap since 1970 or 1955 to present time. Just talk about how we closed the gap. That's my concern, because we're going to be behind because the white infrastructure started before us. So if I start the race before you, I'm going to be ahead of you. But how are we going to change that, close that gap? That's what my concern. I want to hear more statistics about, because I know jail, I know lack of education, lack of father. I am very blessed to have a father who just passed. But I want to know, what are the statistics of how we close that gap from 1955 to folks graduate to the present time? I don't know how old you are. I'm 70.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for D.C. government for 23 years.
Okay.
And my mother was a maid. My father went to school. Then she went to school herself. But
okay.
Just talk about the gap, because they're always going to be ahead of us, but they don't have to be. But we have to find a way to close the gap.
Okay.
Just talk about that. That's depressing.
Oh, well, Debrick, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And to Debrick's point, Tracy, when in kind of moving through the high weeds of this article, or I'm sorry, of this report, was there anything that suggested that there was light at the end of the tunnel, that something could be done? As she suggested, you could almost argue it's old news, almost.
Right. Well, they did suggest mentorship programs, which I know many communities already do, is a way to help black boys in particular have role models. And Raj Chetty's studies in the past have also talked about moving people to better neighborhoods. Now, just because the study says you live in the same street and you're still going to be behind your white peer doesn't mean that moving to a better neighborhood with less crime, more educational opportunities won't help others. You're still going to be better off than if you started in a more low-income neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is those Section 8 vouchers that allow people to choice do help. This is not a hopeless, you know, you're going to be behind no matter what. I mean, you are compared to your white peer who grew up wealthy, but...
But as the study suggested, this isn't so much about how a poor black boy compares to a wealthy black boy. It is suggesting that if you have a poor white boy and a poor white boy that live side by side, and they are provided or not provided, for example, the same kind of advantages that those from affluent communities have, that at some point, either the black boy is going to fall behind or the white boy is going to race ahead.
Correct. The white boy is more likely going to be racing ahead, and that's what it's saying. They do also, and this is really important, the onus is not just on the black community or communities of color to make themselves better. There is a lot to be said about racism and racial bias, and the researchers did address that. In communities where internet tests, they've done psychological tests, in communities where there's less white racial bias against communities of people of color, the black boys in those neighborhoods tend to do better. And so resources could be put into addressing that.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Carr, one would suggest right up your alley that social politics obviously may very well play a role in this.
Absolutely. I mean, Harold, this report doesn't have any solutions because it can't name the obvious thing. We're talking about structural white supremacy, brother. And what does that mean very specifically? It means that when you, let's back it up. We saw that Linda Brown, whose father, Oliver, on behalf of, you know, she and her sister, became one of the plaintiffs in Brown versus Board of Education, made transition a couple of days ago. You know, during the time they were debating how to approach desegregating the schools and in terms of the legal strategy, Charlie Houston, the dean of Howard Law School, argued that this country needed to reimagine the 14th Amendment and say that in addition to eliminating racial segregation, there needed to be a guarantee of perhaps a living wage, what we would call a living wage now, for everyone in the country. In other words, there had to be a structural assault on the economic inequality in this country, and he articulated that as a constitutional issue, potentially. Well, you know, as long as we don't address the fundamental structural inequalities of a white supremacist, capitalist, settler state, and the patriarchy that animates it, we're going to just have these reports come every few years, and I call them death watch studies, the slow death of the society until we can name the absolute thing. When a rich black kid, black boy, and a rich white boy start out with the same money in the same neighborhood, and then you look up as they reach adulthood, and the rich black boy has fallen out of wealth, it has nothing to do with attitudinal changes. Well, it has less to do with attitudinal changes than it does with a structural assault on not just that individual boy, but the concept of that boy and his mother and his father and whoever else as a race. This is a very important thing. So the only solution for this, I mean, this is the last thing I'll say. When you look at the march last Saturday and you see an interracial kind of coalition, the only reason that coalition was interracial was A, white children were harmed, and B, those young white children did recognize that they should use their whiteness as a point of entry for other people. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you. Once we start dealing with coalition politics, we might get closer to a solution, but that's still going to require the type of structural rearrangement that reports like this can't name, because that will require the type of societal restructuring that, you know, Stanford and Harvard ain't ready to get involved in.
I need to take a break. When we come back, more about this issue, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 219-7810. Also, Tasha calling from Maryland. We're also going to talk to you. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Home the Brave.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about economic disparities for black boys when compared to their white peers. We continue this conversation with Washington Post reporter Tracy Jan. She covers the intersection of race and the economy. Also, Dr. Greg Carr, Chair of Afro-American Studies here at Howard University. Lines are still open. If you have a comment or question, at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tasha, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Well, I think, can you hear me?
Yes, go right ahead.
I think the problem is that they're not used to, they think they're entitled to stuff.
They who?
So once the boys.
Okay.
So if they're living in, I have a two-family household, three sons. So they're used to living in a certain household that they have never been poor.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, when they go through high school, they think, oh, well, this is it. My mom and my dad is going to take care of me from here.
Hmm. Okay.
Do you think that
black boys specifically, and one could argue maybe children in general, are spoiled?
I think any kid in general is spoiled, but I think what happens is they think they're entitled to it. So sometimes they're not pushing themselves as hard as they can.
Interesting. Your thoughts about that, Tracy? Because I mean, I think that is, you mentioned being a helicopter parent earlier.
I'm actually not a helicopter parent, but I want to make sure my kid is, you know, okay, maybe I am.
There it is.
More like I'm more concerned about him behaving, you know, properly.
Mm-hmm.
Other parents I see at the park are not as concerned about, I'm on my kid, you know, for the way they behave, but that doesn't really have to do with this.
Well, but it may, because again, I think that when you were talking about the development of a young black boy, what this study suggests is that at some point during that child's development, something is happening with them or to them, i.e. racism, that prevents them from excelling the way their white counterparts are. So if you look at the stereotype, let's talk about stereotypes where the white kids in Walmart are cussing mom out and acting up and the whole bit. And then you have the black boy who, like me, would not be sitting here if I did that same thing. Does that mean that because black boys may be stereotypically not allowed to express in the same way that white kids are not allowed or are allowed to express, that at some point those white kids end up being COOs, CFOs, CEOs, and the black kids end up being workers, whether they be high profile lawyer workers or ditch digging? And there's nothing wrong, obviously, with construction and working with your hands, but you get my point.
That's a really good point. But at the same time, I want my kid to grow up to be able to work versus shot by police, you know?
How about
so
that?
Behaving correctly is, to me, paramount than getting him into Harvard or Stanford.
Yeah, but if all my sons behave correctly, all of them have high GPA, but when it comes to a certain point, I think it's coddling. So we are kind of afraid to let go of them because, like you said, of the shooting, you're afraid that if something's going to happen, that we don't release them. So we don't let them become men.
Interesting. Well, Tasha, thank you for your point of view. I think it is a very provocative and thought worthy sharing with us. I want to talk to Alex now. Alex calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Alex. What's on your mind?
Hi. I think I heard you mention this study earlier this week, but there's a component that I think that is missing in
what's
this
that?
Conversation. Which is what our youth, what these boys that are in these what would be predominantly white, whether it's schools or the workplace, as they're growing up in these affluent communities that most black people in America don't experience. And me having had some life experience with that, I just wanted to speak on it. Sometimes there's a lot of racism. I remember I went to a school I'm supposed to be proud of going to. However, what I had to endure turned me off, especially at that level of class. You have a lot of people where, yeah, I could come over and play, but I can't come over for dinner when their grandparents are over because, you know, they
wow.
believe in Aryan, in that whole Aryan nation, or, you know, their cousin is a skinhead, or sometimes it's the covert racism. Oh, what are you doing here? And how that's projected on our young boys as we're growing up. The parents could be desensitized. My mom was dealing with it in another way in the workplace, but was kind of desensitized from what myself and my siblings went through in our formative years, our adolescent years, and how that plays on us and the decisions that we've made. And we were girls, much less the dynamic between a black male and a white man in this climate right now.
Well, let me see. You know, let me see if my guests can react to what you're saying. Dr. Carr, you first, your thoughts about what Alex is sharing with us.
Well, I think she's absolutely right, and it ties to what the previous caller said. I mean, we're about a week and a half away from the 50th anniversary of the murder of Martin King. And in his last book, Where Do We Go From Here, Chaos or Community, he argued that the beloved community is the only solution to these deep social problems. In other words, a community where every human life is seen as valuable as every other human life. Now, what does that mean very specifically as it relates to this gender question and black boys in this report? Ella Jo Baker, one of Dr. King's colleagues and great comrades in the civil rights struggle, once said, until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. What does that mean? Black life is cheap in America. Alton Sterling's family weeping today in East Baton Rouge. This young brother in Sacramento's grandmother weeping uncontrollably after the police execute him. Black life has to be as valuable as white life. And I'll be quite frank with you, brother. This is why these conversations have to be held in black institutions, and black institutions need to get their weight up and do this research. When you disaggregate this report in terms of, for example, vocations, because they use tax records, but when you look at the deindustrialization, the impact of deindustrialization and joblessness on black people, black men in particular, you've got a problem. When you start looking at those who are higher up in the economic chain, what happens when you have a black child who can't be a child, as you all just got finished talking about? Joy DeGruy writes in her book, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, black children can't roam around. They can't run up and down the aisles in the bank. They can't, because we've been taught from the time we're little, particularly black boys, be very circumspect and be very aware of your surroundings, because the arbitrariness of white violence can take you out at any moment. But what happens when that type of attitude is engendered, and so you can't be a 25-year-old who's just sitting around at the house spending some of the endowment money and trying to figure out what you want to do with your life. Like, say, for example, I don't know, Donald Trump Jr. You can't do that. What is that? Why should our children have that option?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're human.
Yeah.
And until we can have the option to just be leisurely and go into the art to do whatever we want, we will not be able to address this problem. And so this whole conversation we have with our children of be circumspect, be careful, and still after all that, the arbitrariness of white anti-black violence takes them off the earth?
Yeah.
There's only two options to that. Either build the beloved community, or every time, as Malcolm said, they put one of you in the hospital, you send one of them to the graveyard, brother.
Because
that's the only way you're going to even Steven this. And Dr. King had to admit that that's what's going to happen. Those are the two choices, chaos or community. Brother.
Alex, thank you so much for your phone call. And I think to put a finer point on it, you made me think, Dr. Carr, when you were talking about issues of community and even, you know, Tracy alluded to it when she was talking about, you know, the we having, you know, parents in the house to guide, that child. And I even think back to my childhood growing up in Prince George's County. If I were sitting at the center of a compass, so to the east, there was a positive black male role model, not just men in the community, but all of them positive, you know, a 20-year military man to the right, a professional executive to the left, and one across the street, and a college professor at the Northwest, and then, you know, another professional black man, all of them positive role models to the Northeast. I was surrounded, not to mention having my own father there, but surrounded by those positive black male role models. And I think that there should be something that can be said about that as a definition of community. Tracy, I'll let you have your last thoughts about this report.
Oh, no, I was really just reflecting on what Alex, the previous caller, was saying. I really appreciated her perspective, and I think it's a very valuable one, especially for parents who live in middle, upper middle class communities. And you have to be mindful. There are certain places in the country we will not move to because we have a son now. I could have lived there by myself or even as a couple, but as a parent of a Blasian, my son is Blasian kid, I'm not going to live in certain communities, whether they be wealthy white enclaves or, you know, some rural places not used to seeing folks like us.
Yeah, it is. It is a difficult reality, I think one could say, is highlighted by this report. I want to thank both of you for participating in this conversation, Tracy Jan, and of course, Dr. Greg Carr. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Also, we want to thank Valerie Wilson for participating as well. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Tuesday, March 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University.